ただいまからマクロスタイム午前1時をお知らせいたします。
The bathroom is pretty cool. It's got a calendar of Silent Mobius. Who's the guy who said, what happened to Silent Mobius? I've never heard anything about that. There you go, the calendar. It's this year's February, and it's right there in the bathroom. That's where it is.
So, of course, this is Renato talking about the bathroom of the Robot Tar, which is a Mazinga / Kamen Rider / Gundam themed bar, which looks like a back alley shop in Akihabara. Kind of.
A good one.
A good shop.
Like one 10 years ago. And they don't have any of this stuff anymore.
We're surrounded by a bunch of toys and stuff, but we've just come out.
VHS.
And a VHS player.
It's busy too. Every table is filled and almost every seat is filled.
Yeah, it's almost closing time.
And the Deluxe Space Mammy, whatever that is.
Deluxe Space Mammy. It's from Ultraman 80?
Ultraman 80.
Is Ultraman 80 the cartoon? The animated one? I don't know. I'm sorry.
So, of course, this is Gwyn, and next to me I've got returning champion Egan from ANN. Hi, Egan.
I'm not sure how to respond with that, but yeah.
You can just say hi.
Normally when people say hi, people
say hi.
And we're here because we've just come out.
People aren't called returning champions, so I'm like, what the?
we've just come out of a Cheer Kajura gig, finished literally moments ago. We're back at Zur the Zoo in Yoyogi, you may remember from a previous cast. And last time we noticed, there was a bar with a big Mazinga out the front. A human-sized Mazinga. Unfortunately, not a one-to-one-sized Mazinga. So we dropped by to have a drink and throw some impressions down. The concert was Thank You 20, which is the first in what will be a series of 20th anniversary concerts for Cheer Kajiura. Renato, how was it?
It was funkadelic, funk-amazing, funkalicious. It was really cool. And last time we were at this venue, and she did... What was the title of the... Was it Laboratory?
Laboratory.
Okay. I seem to recall I didn't have the best impression of that. It wasn't a bad concert by any means, but I think I said before, every time she has a concert, she usually rearranges something. She brings in, like, some tabla drums or a violin player or a trumpet section or, like, a theremin or whatever. And this time it was just, like, basically most of the songs are straight as they are on the record. I mean, last time, right? So I was kind of thinking, well, I guess she's tired of experimenting. That wasn't as great. I'm not sure if I'll get to the next one. Well, I'm glad I did because this was amazing, really, really cool, and it was longer than usual, wasn't it? They had
over 2 hours long, although there was about a 15-minute break in the middle.
It wasn't that long. It was probably 10 at
most.
It's
pretty long.
Well, yeah, but that's because they were playing jungle music.
No, not good jungle not music. Bad jungle music.
That wasn't so bad. It was atmospheric. What I really liked about this one is that the stage lights themselves.
Flashing the feeling smash. What? Sorry, yeah.
Stage lights. Stage fright. Thank you, Carl. So, throw me away, of course, now. Look, like, at the beginning of the second half, they had, like, these spotlights which were diffused into different tiny spotlights. So they looked like lasers, but they weren't. And they were changing colors, and the players weren't lit. Like, not for the first couple of songs. So it was all trippy and kind of like, if you've seen The Kids Are Alright, The Who movie, which, maybe you guys have not.
I've seen Doctor Who.
Oh yeah, it's the same thing. Actually, it is the same thing because it got lasers there too. There's this really trippy sequence in the climax of the movie where they're performing "You Won't Get Fooled Again," and there's a instrumental keyboard solo where they go and then it goes bow, and that's when all the lasers start going weirdo. So it felt like that. It was really cool, really trippy, and there were lots of extended instrumental solos here. The keyboard solos went on forever.
Right.
It was really, really good. You should explain like the breakdown because they had different sections.
They did. There weren't as many macro songs as I was hoping for, and I'm sure I said this last concert as well, but I was expecting a couple more of this gig because she didn't do many last gig. But then again, it wasn't one of the Animania ones. It was or whatever she calls her anime-based ones. This was one of her ones.
Yeah, so yeah.
Kind of makes sense. But, yeah, we have special guests. And, you know, we got, what, five, six Macross songs, I'd say?
I don't know. We got quite a lot. I would say the first half was mostly Macross songs, isn't it?
So we got my friends, Pillow Dream...
We're going to get Pillow Dream.
Do we get Pillow Dream?
No.
Okay.
Fall,
oh yeah.
And before we go into that, you should go into like the first special guest.
Well, the first special guest we had was Tomo Sakurai, Miss I Would Never Wear Something That Scandalous herself.
She wasn't wearing anything scandalous, no, except for pink box.
We're going to mention her pink box. Pink box 50 was what her shirt read. So next time you think of... Milan, pink, at the age of 50, think of Milan's pink box, I guess? I don't know. It was the most bizarre shirt. I don't know what she meant by it, but anyway.
Yeah, she had some fluffy thing in her hair. I don't know what it was. So she was obviously dressing rather young, but...
And it was a so we got double Milan.
Yeah, yeah. And when this is the thing. When they were standing together, there was a bit of banter going to
there was
going between the, both of them, and I was thinking, well, these guys, yeah,
could not be more diametrically opposed,
and yet they do compliment each other really, really well when they're on stage.
They do, and I thought they did that in the first Milan Night gig where we got the double Milan,
which I didn't go to. So actually, this was the first time experiencing that. That was pretty
cool. I wish we got more songs with them together. Then for your time, because
I think there was only one, wasn't there?
Well, or more Tomo, because overall Tomo was only there for three songs.
Yeah,
so we got four.
Fall is a really good, really funky kind of song that is often overlooked. I never hear people on Macross World talking about it. I never hear people on that Macross Fans US group talking about it. So you know, I'm glad that it got its fair share in the limelight, literally.
Literally. And we also got My Beautiful Place.
Okay, and this is where we should mention the Tourette's guy.
Wait. Now, last time we were at the cheer concert, Renato, you had some drunken girl publicly insulting you.
Yeah.
This time we're in this gig, and there's a guy apparently with Tourette's.
Was he next to you, or was he a bit
no,
further
he was a little bit further on, but he just yelled out stuff all the time.
Hi. You may answer. I'll tell you. We've got to pay, man.
We've got to pay the check. They're going to kick us out of the Mazoom bar. And he just kept yelling random stuff out. Kind of like, well, it was related, like, oh, yeah, well, I think it's over already.
Well, she made everyone mad. This one was, I mean, she said, okay, my next song is going to, this is Tomo Sakurai was on stage by herself at this point, and she'd just done Fall, and she said, okay, well, my next song is going to be from Milan Genius since Lin Min Mei, and it's called My Beautiful Place. At which Gwyn is grinning. We should just call you Gwyn Campbell now. The guy with Tourette's just randomly said, I wonder what it's going to be.
Sorry, what's that?
Like, she just said. Why would he... Well, did he not get that was the name? I don't know.
Maybe the stage was her beautiful place and she was going to sing something?
I'm going to show you my beautiful place. Well, okay, what,
well,
what
had
is
the
it?
Pink box.
Let me just open the box.
But it was a good rendition, and well, as if you have been to the first Milan Night, you have known, like, she does, I think, early Min Mei songs kind of better than Mari does these days.
Oh, really? Well, this one, both of these songs, I think, were rather fitting to have her as a vocal, because, I don't know if you remember the episode of the, I think it's the episode with the Protoculture Ruins. On Planet Lux or Rax or whatever you want to call it. Rax. Tyrannosaurus Rax. There are dinosaurs on it, so it could be Rax.
It could be.
Whatever. Anyway, Milan starts singing that song, but it's Tomo Sakurai who's singing it. And that's the only time they ever perform that song in the show.
Mm-hmm.
On the record, it's Chia Kajira. But the only time that you hear it is a cappella with Tomo Sakurai. And she only sings like the first bar or so, and then Gamlin tells her to shut up because otherwise the sound energy reactor isn't going to detect anything. Anyway, so that's a good reason to have her sing this one. And then the second one was the second was The Beautiful Place,
right?
She sang that because she was the one singing on the Milan Genius Sings Min Mei album,
right?
So Chia never sang that one. And then the third song was Friends Jiku wo Koete, Across the Dimensions, which is a really great song, and we heard it recently again because there was that fan event, the Milan Not Milan Party number one.
The Not Milan Party, which we'll get to later.
Will we? Okay. I thought we talked about that. I don't know. I can't keep track. Anyway, so that was fun, but that wasn't a duet when she did it at that event. Right. But this one was. This was both of the doubled Milens, and it worked really well. It was really good. And I think the first Milen night had both of them too. As I said, I wasn't there.
The first time they had a concert where they both came in was back when Macross 7 was still airing. There was a concert they had for Firebomber.
Right, right.
And then they had surprise guests. In fact, yeah, I think one of the books shows you a montage of photos where Sakurai
doesn't that book have that's from the Live Fire, which is all Tomo Sakurai and Nomtoshikana, and we would have wanted our money back if we had been there, I think.
Yeah, because as you said, the surprise guests were the real singers at the end, just for the encore. And yeah, that would have been.
Tomo looked really sweaty in those pictures.
Oh god. Yeah. Well, she didn't have her pink box closed.
Exactly. Wait, what? Anyway, so we also got a really, really good version of My Friends, right? Was it My Friends? No, what was the last? No, what was the last song of that set? That first opening set was it?
I think it was My Friends. I mean, she did Sweet Fantasy as well.
It was My Friends, yeah.
And there was a duet that they did together. Yeah, Friends.
That was Friends, yeah.
But the last song of that set.
I'll be there for you. I think that's how it goes.
I repeat, the last song of that set was an extended and good version, I thought, of My Friends. We're back to just cheer.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was a really good version for some reason.
Yeah.
But the second half.
She did Sweet Fantasy. Yeah, so I don't think she did that many of her own solo songs. She did two or three at the beginning. And then after that, it was mostly Macross.
Well, then the second half was nearly all of her original stuff. Mostly.
Yes.
Predominantly,
yes.
Right. And that was a very different vibe than the first half.
It was really, really psychedelic, kind of trippy, trancey stuff. And I loved it. It was fantastic.
They took a break first, and they called the concert. Oh my god, Explosion and Inside. So the first half was supposed to be the explosion, and the second half was supposed to be the inside. And she said, you know, the sun's supposed to have gone down, although the sun went down long before we got to this point in the gig. And
well, the real sun.
The real sun,
right.
Yeah. Right. And the second half was supposed to be more, I don't want to say adult entertainment, but more, you know, funky underground. You're in a club kind of.
Yeah, yeah. And they had this guy called Otsuki something, I forget his first name. So he was the guest musician. He played a really, really funky guitar.
Yeah, he was a really good guitarist.
He was fantastic.
He added a lot to the songs, and I remember thinking, I'd like this guy to do some stuff for Delta or something. Like, he's got this new vibe to his guitar playing, which for Macross at least, is kind of, it would have been unique, but of course that's not going to happen. But yeah, he really spiced up all her songs, all her original songs, which we're used to hearing her sing, to the point that we know what order they're going to come up in. Like, it was pretty obvious by both the lead-ins and the order. Okay, next we're probably going to get... Yeah, and it was... Yeah. So, but the way he spiced them up a bit with the guitar brought something new to them, and plus she extended them a bit. So that playfulness, the experimentation we've always talked about in the Milen Nights, which is normally only applied to her Macross songs, she was applying to her own songs.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's always really amazing when you can hear an old song. You know, you can recognize it, but it sounds really fresh. And like I said, that like most of the songs from the second set were from the new album, the mini album. And like I said before, those songs, I mean, they're either not mastered correctly or not engineered properly, I don't know. But they just don't sound exciting on the record. And here they sounded really, really alive. And
she did your favorite song, which has that one paragraph of lyrics.
Yeah, and it sounds amazing. Because you turned around to me, like, during the intro, you were like, here it goes, favorite song. And I said, but it is when it's live. It sounds amazing. And it had that heavy drum thing. It had this wailing guitar from the guy. And when it was done, I turned around to you and said, does it sound like that on the CD? Does it sound like that? No, it doesn't. So, yeah, she should redo that whole thing. There was also this instrumental that, I mean, it had her on vocals, but just wailing about that.
Well, she was
really, really sounded
on the vocals as well.
Right, that's what I mean.
It's basically, like, yelling? Screaming.
Yeah. And that sounded fantastic as well. And I don't know if that was his song, but I haven't heard that song on any of her records.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard it before.
It's good. really, really good. Like, if you're into that kind of thing, I thought that maybe a few of the Macross guys in the audience were maybe not put out, but they weren't into it as much as the first half. I mean, when my friends and Sweet Fantasy were kicking in, they were like jumping up and down, but right. Here they were like, yeah.
I think the Macross songs definitely get the crowd going because it's always where the fans came from initially,
right? Yeah. But this was as exciting as ever. Yeah, so if we go back to the first set and we see Chie and Tomo together on stage, I was thinking, wow, you know, Macross 7 was a really great show. I really like, and it was kind of a nostalgic thing to listen to these songs. And yeah, they do sound fresh, but it was like, wow, I really, really like this song. It really took me back. But this second set was like, well, she's a musician now. She's here and now, and she's doing this exciting stuff today. And yeah, I thought it was great. Much, much better than the slight disappointment that was the previous.
Right. Although, to be granted, there was less interaction with the audience this time around.
That's true.
We got more talking from Tomo, who talked and talked and talked.
Yeah, and she's good at that. You know, she really, it's really appeals that she's an actress.
Yeah, she's got that Seiyu training. I mean, she's catching the band members out with her banter, you know, which is kind of funny. And compared to that, yeah, she is much more of a... She sings, but she talks a little bit, but we didn't get the interaction after the gig this time around. She went to the table, did some autographs on T-shirts and CDs only. But I think... A special shout out has to be made to the final song of the concert.
Oh, Kimi ni Toroke.
Yeah, Kimi ni Toroke a cappella with just a keyboard.
Yeah, keyboard like made to sound like a piano.
Right.
That was really good. You know, halfway through it really reminded me of that that acoustic version of Voices that's on the second Macross Plus album.
Right.
It really had that kind of, like, during the chorus, it had that crescendo going with the piano.
Well, is the pianist normally at her gigs?
I don't know. She changes her lineup almost every time.
We've still got the same bassist and guitarist and drummer, but this keyboardist, he was pretty good.
Yeah. Like I said, he had a couple of extended keyboard solos that were really, really good.
Yeah. So, Egan, any thoughts? I mean, when was the last time you saw Chia? How many years ago?
Oh, because you went to the One Night Stand thing.
But she wasn't at the One Night Stand.
Oh,
she was pregnant.
That's right.
I guess it might have been the last time that concert I was talking about back when Macross 7 was still airing.
So
I can't remember.
The Live Fire, the one that became Live Fire.
I'm trying to think of what else.
Because they did two of them.
Let's see. Oh, and that was at Sun Plaza. You know how Sun Plaza is closed? Is the demolishing Sun Plaza, right? The Nakano Sun Plaza?
They're, what?
I was surprised.
Megumi Nakajima there like 2 years ago.
A lot of good memories. Oh, yeah, they're closing it, and then they're going to make way for something else. So I was just getting all nostalgic with so many anime.
First Radio Kaikan, now the Plaza. Yeah, what the hell?
I'm trying to remember if Kajiura went to any of the anniversary events. Not One Night Stand, but any of the other ones.
Well, she was at the ones we went to.
Okay.
But so you haven't seen her perform in 15 years.
At least some time.
And so how was it? I mean, this was probably a crash course on her original songs for you, I dare say.
I hear a couple of them here and there, but yeah, definitely heard a lot more here and... Her voice still works. I mean, after all the amazing things, like you were saying, she has a different, she's not mainstream by any stretch of the imagination. And her voice lends itself well to her. It's rock, but not mainstream rock. It's a little bit alternative in it. It's got her own vibe. And yeah, it still carries after all the, it's amazing after all these years.
Yeah. I mean, she has everything that a current musician stroke artist would have, you know, to be unique and keep going, making their own stuff. So I would say, like, this last album was a disappointment for me, just straight out, just because of the way it was engineered or produced or mastered or however you want to put it. But live, she makes those songs shine really, really well. And I like that you described it as a kind of a crash course in what Chie is. What she represents, because this is basically a cross section of everything. It's almost like her greatest hits, and I don't think I've been to a concert that's been like that.
Well, you were saying to me earlier, will we be getting any more Chie albums? Because she seems to have done some
rearranging of her of her living space.
Well, when I saw her, I think last year she did a couple of concerts where she was just a guest vocal, and she did a couple of songs on her own, and then went backstage. Anyway, she was saying that she got rid of her computer with Pro Tools on it, which, if you don't know, is the software that independent musicians do to edit their music. So I was thinking maybe this is the last Cheer album. You know, she actually doesn't have the equipment anymore, according to what she said.
Unless she records on wax.
Right, waxing lyrically. Because she's selling wax candles. She makes her own candles.
A bunch of them at the gig and all very atmospheric.
Yeah, I wouldn't buy one.
No, I wouldn't buy one. But alrighty. So she's also said she's going to be doing a bunch of these gigs, small gigs, throughout the course of the next year. The next one will be in Osaka, so Howard will be calling on you to give us some impressions when that happens.
Howard's.
And yeah, so let's move on.
Okay, and we're back for part two of the modeling talk. We talked mostly about the 1980s kits before, with a brief stopover with the Macross 2 and 7 kits. But in 1999, I think it was 99.
I guess 2001.
Oh,
it was like December 2000, yeah.
Okay. Hasegawa, yeah, who mostly do fighter jets, picked up the Macross license. And I remember going into an anime store near my place and seeing this and just being like, oh my god, this looks so good.
Well, when I first saw them, it was when I wasn't really into anime at the time. I kind of had, like, I always call it my 90s sabbatical, where I kind of after Macross 2, I just had a lot of different other things in life, and stuff was really hard to get, and, you know, it was my first job, and, you know, but I remember going into a local hobby shop, and I saw the Hasegawa VF fighter kits. And, you know, and so I liked them. We were cool. But, you know, I really didn't explore them until like 2007.
Okay.
So, and what about you, Kyle? Was the first time you saw those?
Oh, God. It was when I first started watching Macross about 3 years ago. So, well,
go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say you can hear about my backstory in the Macross World Con podcast. But
oh, okay.
Around that same time, I decided, hey, I want some of this merchandise. And I was looking around for Valkyries. I was in college at the time, so I was on a budget. So toys were kind of out of my league at the time.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. That's why I started building model kits in the first place.
Well, yeah.
Well, to a little background, I mean, Hasegawa releasing these kits was a major thing for the company because they're very they're a small company. They focus mostly on aircraft and motorcycles, Japanese motorcycles, Japanese cars, and ships. And pretty much that's all they've done since 1967. They haven't done any anime properties whatsoever.
They did Area 88 in the mid-90s.
Yes, but from a kit that they already made.
Right.
So you know, they threw in some decals. Hey, that's cool. But as a brand new, like, they didn't go out and say, hey, we want to do Gundam. We're going to start doing Gundam kits or something like that. So it was very, very radical for Hasegawa to do this as a company, to have that company go in that direction. I think they did Visual O. I think they did a vehicle from Ultraman.
Yeah.
One of the spaceships.
That was later, though.
Yeah. And they did the Hasegawa kits. And it's a really good match for Hasegawa because, you know, the real world-ish of the Valkyrie was wonderfully, I mean, the tooling, not, I'm not going to talk about the actual building of the kit, but the actual look of anybody that could do a Valkyrie kit and make it look beautiful, it's got to be Hasegawa.
And make it look not like in something that was animated for a TV show, but to make it look like a real aircraft.
And that's the beauty of the kits.
Yeah, well, as a kid growing up, I was very experienced. Okay. I use that term very loosely. I had some experience building, you know, like aircraft models. My dad would get a bunch of Revell kits, and we would, you know, sit around and build, like, you know, P-80 shooting stars and all that.
Yeah.
And so when I started looking for VF-1 merchandise, I came across the Hasegawa kit, which was, you know, affordable for me. It was a VF-1J. And I picked that up, and I'm like, you know, I know how to build kits. So this shouldn't be too big of a problem. So it's like 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm like trying to panel line this thing, and I'm just like in tears. It was not very good.
Well, that's when I first saw them. I said, you know, when I get money, I get a job, I'm going to go and buy one of these Hasegawa kits. So 2007, I get my job, and I get a really good paying job. I move out. You know, the first thing I do is I go to Frankincense. And the first thing I buy at Frankincense is I buy the VF-1A Super Valkyrie by Hasegawa. And I same thing. I'm thinking, hey, I built Valkyries. I can do this. This is no problem. And I opened up that box of them all, and I said, you know, what the F is this?
Right.
What the heck is this? And I looked at it, it's not a problem. I mean, it's like I can glue a model kit together.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not the issue. The issue is the steps of when, you know, you got to build the engine part first, and then you got to put that on the outside, and then you got to make sure that this clear part is colored, so when you paint this color, you can put the next thing on top of that. And that's what I didn't know.
Right.
And I looked at that kit and I said, I pushed it aside. I said, no, I gotta build the regular fighter version before I ever attempt to build the super version. It was just too many parts. It was just too much. And I eventually did the fighter and got a feel for it. And I've built four since, but it's just, I did a review of the VF-1A when I eventually finished it, like 10 years later, or 7 years later. I finally finished it. I think I finished it in 2011. I'm still not done. I still haven't painted the figures and stuff. But, you know, it's just they Hasegawa and Fujimi are known for this, is that there's an F4 Phantom. And so the F4 Phantom, there's 20 different versions of it. You know, there's the Air Force, the Army version, the Navy version, the Israeli version, the British version, the Japanese version. They're all different.
Yeah.
So what they do is they do a basic kit for all these different versions, and then you get the parts that you insert into them to make it into the different variations of the fighter.
Right.
And F4 Phantom is known for that. There must be like 10,000 model kits of an F4 Phantom. It's the Sherman tanks of airplanes, you know.
Yeah.
And so Hasegawa, I think what they wanted to do, what makes these kits so difficult, is that they built them in a way that although it doesn't transform, all the components are cut in a way that it does transform, and it really doesn't need it.
It seemed like they were engineering it to make a Gerwalk that they could reuse parts for, which of course they didn't end up doing until last year, three months ago.
Another thing that was really jarring about that kit when I was first building it is, like, I get the fighter mode together. I'm like, okay, I'm okay with this. I've swallowed my pride. Let's put some weapons on this thing. I look in the box. What do you mean there's no weapons?
Right.
What?
And
it's like, oh, you've forsaken me. Right.
Well, that's the thing for Hasegawa, and I think that's another business model that airplane modelers do it. And it might seem weird in anime models, but for airplanes, this is very common. And so you had the let's just say all the things, and I say this in my review. You have the VF-1A kit that costs $30, okay? You need the photo etch. That's $12, $15. You need the weaponry. That's another $20. You need the stand. That's another $15. And I'm trying to think if there's any other things. I think that's all the things. And then you got to get the paints
right.
And everything. And you put that all together. I mean, I literally just straight ahead, just to get all the basics to build that VF1A cost me $140.
You might as well get a Yamato at that point.
Exactly, you know, and that was the big issue with those VF1 kits, is that it was just too much.
And it took a few years for them to come out with the weapons set. So yeah. For a while there was just the kit. And then, like, I think the following year they came out with the one with the super parts, and then they came out with the weapons set. And for the ones that are not the VF1, like when they started making, like, the Macross Plus
and Zero
kits, then they put the pilots in. Then they put weapons in.
And that was the big thing. For instance, I have a criticisms on all that stuff. I mean, for instance, as he was saying with the missile kit, you get the missile kit, but you get the fighter pilots, but you only get the Do You Remember Love right. fighter pilots, and it sucks because especially if you want to do the TV version, which I'm doing right now, and luckily there's somebody who makes resin kits of these of the VF1, and that's I think even the Gerwak kit just came out.
Yeah, like what is that sort? Like what are they called?
The pilots?
Yeah, no, who makes those?
I don't know. I have it as a saved search.
Yeah, no, because there was someone on Macross World who was making them.
Hmm. Yeah.
Wasn't Exo making them?
I don't think it was him. I think it was someone else, but I can't remember who.
And the other thing is the stands. You know, they're just ugly.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, my friends love, you know, that I go to an IPMS fitting, and they love my Valkyrie models. But, like, there was three or four saying, that stand's got to go, man. It's just, it's awful. And once again, it's a universal stand that fits all their Valkyries or whatever, if it's a VF-11 or whatever. It's supposed to be usable for all of them, but it's very fragile. And it just doesn't have any, there isn't based on anything in the anime. And,
yeah.
You know, so it's just kind of this ugly looking thing, you know. And the photo etch, you know, has some issues as well. I mean, about half of the photo etch is really good, and the other half is just like, you know, you could have just included that as a plastic part, you know. So
the photo etch, that's like getting way beyond anything that I would do.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, how exactly do you like glue a metal piece to plastic? Do you just
I have never been a fan of photo etched. I say that in the review. I only built them because some of the parts are usable for what you need, but you use CA glue, of course, but they break off, you know, that stuff, you know, you really have to just put it on and just like, you know, and just put your hands off it and hope nothing hits it. But yeah. Kyle, so what was your build of the VF1A? I mean, what did you think of it? What were the pros and the cons of it?
Maybe you should just list the pros. That would take less time.
It looks like a VF1J. It does look very nice when it's finally finished. The panel lines are very well done. The lines are very clean. It definitely looks the part, and it looks like if they took a real version of the VF1, like if it was a real aircraft, and they built a model kit off of that rather than, say, like a 2D animation.
Yeah.
And that being said, I still am not that experienced in building models.
Yeah.
It is not intended for people who are inexperienced.
No.
And you need a lot of patience if you're going to do one of these right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll honestly say, you know, the VF1J, I reviewed it for Hikaru's version. I reviewed it for Collection DX. That is the best model kit I've ever finished. It looks beautiful. The panel lining on it, and there's a lot of nuance, a lot of little details that are just gorgeous. And every time I look at it, there's like another panel. Even though I'm sanding and painting and stuff, there's always a little panel line or something on it that I've never seen before. And that it's just like you admire.
It's like the Do You Remember Love of model kits.
Yeah, you know, it's just really unfortunate that it took that long to get to that point. And I, you know, I'm sure a lot of people give up on it. I know a lot of people do. And like I said, I built three or four, and you know, I'm ready to move on.
I have, I mean, I tried to build the, like you, Leo, I tried to build the Super VF1A first, and it was just way beyond me. So then I tried, like, just one of the VF1s. I think it was a VF1S, and got about halfway done and just kind of put it away. And then I tried another one later, and that one turned out okay. Uh-huh. I've never built one that I've been happy with.
Yeah.
I also did one of the Batroids. I did the VF1J, and that was all right.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's an easier kit in a lot of ways.
Which ones have you done, Kyle?
Let's see. I've done the VF1J. I've done a 1A, a 19, and a VF21.
How are those?
So yeah,
because I have the 19, but I haven't.
Yeah, same thing. I have them, but I haven't built them yet.
In a few ways, it's a bit easier than the VF1 in that the parts seem to go together a lot more simplistically, I guess.
Okay, it looked like it.
You don't have to layer things on and paint things before you apply them, and they look great. They have the same quality of finished product as the VF1As do. The panel lines again are beautiful, and I have no complaints. This, I think, the one I'm most proud of is probably the VF19. It was fun. It was relaxing. It was like a stroll in the park compared to that one.
Yeah, I'm about maybe two thirds of the way through with the VF0, Roy version.
Right.
And same thing. It's for instance, the arms on the VF1A. I mean, it's what's it? 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's 8 parts, right. Whereas the one
for
on the zero is 2 parts.
Yeah.
So there's 2 parts, you know, and you just glue the parts together. And I'm glad they didn't compromise the nuance of the airframe and the panel lining and stuff. And it comes with the figure, and the decal sheet's really nice. And so I'm that's the only other one that I have been working on other than the VF1s. And I'm probably going to start on the Batroid pretty soon, and that looks like a pretty fun kit as well. And what about you? Which ones did you build? Have you built?
Me?
The Hasegawa?
The only one I think I ever finished was a VF1S, and it fell apart. For a while there, I was just collecting them, and I wanted to make sure I had 3 copies of each one, just in case I screwed it up. The one that I have probably 4 or 5 copies of that I'd really love to build is the VF22.
Yeah.
But that was limited.
Yeah.
What is it, the moon shooters version?
No, I mean I just got the regular one, so it comes with decals. Okay. Let's see, it's printed in light blue, and it shows Max's on the front, but it also...
Oh, yeah, you have the Macross 7.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, same thing with me. That's a very tough one to find.
Well, I'm wondering if Hasegawa... Because one thing that we learned a while back is that each of the Macross licenses is separate.
Yeah.
So this was one of the problems with the VF4... that Yamato came out with, that it wasn't the Flashback 2012 one. It was the VFX one.
Which I'm okay with. I like the VFX.
Yeah, I know.
You and you alone, I think.
The VF4 can come with, fur to put on it, and I'll still buy it.
But
there's one thing that we haven't really talked about is the artwork on the Hasegawa.
Oh, yeah. Which is...
That is, Tengen. What's his full name?
Hidetaka.
Hidetaka. Yeah, Hidetaka. It's Tengen. I mean, that stuff is just amazing. I mean, it just draws you in. I mean, the power of his artwork and just the angles that he uses and just the nuance of his backgrounds and the situation. I mean, they're just gorgeous. He's a genius.
Yeah.
I mean, and they really do sell the kits. I mean...
Well, definitely. One of the things, the first time I ever met him, Adrian and Gwen and Renato invited me out to dinner, and he was there. And the reissue of the VF1D had just come out.
Ooh. Yeah.
So the first VF1D kit just showed a photo of the model.
Yeah.
On the cover.
It's and only time Hasegawa's done that.
Yeah. And then the second one showed the VF1D flying over South Italia Island, and it looked
gorgeous.
Really cool. And yeah. So that had just come out. So so I told him that I really, really loved that picture. And he said that, yeah, they had come out with the VF1D kit first, and it didn't sell very well. And they decided that probably one of the reasons it didn't sell very well was because it didn't have a tension picture on the cover. So when they reissued it, they asked him to do a painting for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, with the Macross 7 one, I'm wondering if they didn't renew the Macross 7 license.
Yeah, you know, Hasegawa, I go a little background with this, and I'm sure Kyle's experienced this, is that Hasegawa does these little limited edition kits. They've been doing this even before they got Macross. They'll put out like a crazy kit that's not in their catalog, not on their website. None of the dealers, you know, at least in the United States, know about it. And like, for instance, like I got a special edition of one of the torpedo bombers used in Pearl Harbor. It's a Hasegawa kit, and it comes with resin parts. It comes with the resin bomb and stuff.
Wow.
Because it was and it has the instruction decals for like the main guy who planned the Pearl Harbor attack, and it's awesome. But there's no listing of it anywhere.
Yeah.
And then like there's another one that Hasegawa did was a TBM Avenger. And I guess the Japanese Defense Force, before they became the Japanese Defense Force, used these old surplus American bombers, and you know they put Japanese the symbols on them and stuff, and it had a modified cockpit. It's very different from a normal TBM Avenger. And again, it's just you see it once. When you see these limited edition kits once, by Hasegawa, you have to pick them up.
Yeah.
Because they're just going to disappear, and they're not. I don't want to say they're unofficial, but they're not above water. They're just kind of right there. And I think a lot of those Macross, you know, the Macross 7 one, the VF-22 you're talking about, is just some of those kits that just kind of come and go.
Yeah. The Area 88 ones are like that. Lucked out once and happened to come across a bunch of them.
See? I've never seen them at all.
Yeah, and there are still a few that I've never seen.
Yeah.
I even sent Hasegawa an email. like just saying, you know, is there any way that I could buy just the decal sheet?
Yeah.
From you.
Yeah.
And they just sent back and said, sorry, we stopped making those.
Yeah.
You know, we hope you enjoy Hasegawa models forever.
Well, that's weird. The Hasegawa, the VF-14, they did the Macross Zero F-14.
Yeah. That I've never seen anywhere.
Yeah, and that one took me. That was one of those rare kits where I actually had to pay for it. When it comes down to it, I've always try to get a deal on stuff. I always try to find it cheap, and if I wait long enough, I'll find it. But after like 2 or 3 years of waiting, there's a dealer that just happened to have one at Frank & Sons. And I just paid for it. It was like $35, but I said, you know what? This is it. I'm never gonna see it again.
Yeah.
And it's really weird because the kit that comes with it is a raised panel line old Hasegawa kit, and it's like I was really disappointed with that because I don't know if Hasegawa had since done a recessed panel line F-14, a real modern kit.
Yeah.
But they boxed it with an old Hasegawa kit with raised panel lines. That's just not really that. You know,
yeah, it's a really ancient F-14A kit when really what you need is the newer F-14D kit for it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it is just weird that they just – I didn't know what Hasegawa, why they didn't just release the decal sheet of the F-14 and the Russian fighter that they did, MiG-29.
Yeah, the MiG I ended up finding.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, the MiG is really – I see the MiG quite often, but you never see the F-14. And what people do is they'll take the extra figures of the Zero kits because they come with two figures, and then you can use them for the F-14 to kind of Macross-ize it, you know.
Right.
But it's a reasonable kit, you know. So pretty much, you know, that's Tosagawa. You know, it's recently they've been adding a lot more kits. There was kind of a 3 or 4 year spell where they really didn't add much except for the VF-11, which yeah. All I need to do is put the decals on. It's a great kit. It's a nice little kit. I don't know if you've seen it, Kyle, or not.
I have, and I am lusting for the VE-11 Thunderseeker.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
The resin parts, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to buy that.
Yeah.
I agree.
Oh, wait, no, I'm not thinking of the Thunderseeker. I'm thinking of the Macross the Ride one.
Oh, yeah, the...
That has the camera.
And they did the cute egg fighters, too. Yeah. Those are really fun. Yeah. You know,
and then finally they came out with a Gerwalk,
yeah,
which I've been waiting for forever.
Yeah, I think every Macross fan has been waiting for a modern kit of the Gerwalk, and it looks good, and I'm looking forward to building one myself. But yeah, that was always a big complaint. What were you gonna say, Kyle?
Well, I was just gonna say, from my understanding, up until now, they released, you know, both Fighter and Battleroid, and they also had like little upgrade kits where you could make a Gerwalk if you wanted to.
That was Wonderfest stuff.
That was Wonderfest. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Every once in a while, someone would make like, well, if you have a Fighter kit and you have a Battleroid kit, here's a little conversion kit so that you can make a Gerwalk. and then recently, someone did one where you could make an armored Valkyrie.
Oh, wow.
Which would be really cool, because, I mean,
yeah.
Hasegawa made the armored VF-0, but they haven't made an armored VF-1.
I think that would be number one on my list. I wish Hasegawa... Two things I would love to see Hasegawa build. Number one would be an armored Battleroid.
Yeah.
You know, super armor, or heavy armor. I want to build that so bad. You know, and I like to see the Kai, or the Fire... The Basaros.
Yeah, well, again, I'm wondering about that because they came out with the VF-22 as the Macross 7 kit. It was the only Macross 7 kit they ever came out with. And I'm wondering if they're just not renewing the license because, I mean, they came out with the VF-11B. Then they came out with the armored VF-11B.
Mm-hmm.
Macross Plus versions. So, like, Isamu's. And the most natural thing in the world, I think, would then be to, like, print up a bunch of them in white and come out with the Macross 7 VF-11C.
Yeah, but the new toy for the gun.
They haven't done that. So it kind of makes me wonder if they just don't have the Macross 7 license anymore.
Well, it's interesting because the VE-11 has Macross 7 as its... You know, where this is from. Macross 7 on the box. So I'm assuming they probably do have the license, but I don't...
Maybe, you know, maybe it's just a popularity thing. Maybe, you know, just they feel that, you know, Hasegawa is a very conservative company.
Yeah.
When they do small releases, they don't do huge releases. And I think they're just going for what they know is going to sell, Plus and
At the Frontier, same time, I mean, they have the VF-11 mold.
They do. And that's I think later on down the road, I think it is going to happen, but I don't think it's going to happen right away. I think they want to just get out what they have for the first, what they can get right now from it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So that's just their business model. They're very conservative company. They're not Tamiya. They're not like Bandai. I don't think there's a lot of people even that work for the company. I would think it's probably less than 25 people, probably.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, the one for stuff like that I always thought was amazing was when Fine Molds got the Star Wars license. Since there are only 5 people working at Fine Molds.
Yeah, exactly. So that was.
Of course, now Bandai has the Star Wars license too. Yeah. Bandai's got everything. Which leads us into the next VF1 topic, which I think Kyle is the expert on. The much maligned, supposedly overseen by Kawamori, but I think not as supervised as anyone would like, the new transformable VF1 Valkyrie.
Yeah!
I think it's called the variable changes or something. Variable Valkyrie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, how was that, Kyle?
Okay, well, if anybody has read Andrew Colley's review on Collection DX, it is a very, very good review. It is very accurate. I tried to blind myself from that review because I was going to a con the next day when it came up. And so I was like, you know what, I don't want to see the review for this because I want to be excited for this. I know it's going to be great because it's going to have the panel delivery system for the legs.
Yeah, yeah. It's the first time I've ever done that.
So it's me at Otakon. and, you know, I find somebody selling the kit for, you know, $40. Not too bad.
That's not bad, yeah.
No, yeah. And then I realized this box is really big for a 172 kit. And then I opened up the box, because I knew this was going to be like a Gunpla.
Yeah.
And I opened the box up, and I just wanted to crawl into a fetal position and cry. Because there were no less than a dozen sprue trees and metal pins.
God.
And I had never done anything with metal pins before. I was, like, terrified when I was putting this thing together. So,
I'm... Go ahead.
Okay. So I get home from Baltimore, and I'm excited to put this thing together. The manual is very nice. I can't read Japanese, but it's pretty well thought out, and it's easy for me to follow along everything. So I start building the kit, and I'm actually really enjoying this, because I do like building Gunpla. I didn't have to worry about, you know, paint, and I wasn't going to do anything more complicated than, you know, just a dry build. Until, you know, I found out if this thing is worth continuing. So I, you know, have it all set up to go and everything, and I decide, hey, why don't I try transforming this thing? And I transformed it once. No, you know what? No, I didn't transform it once. Okay, the thing started popping apart and collapsing. And I, after a week of trying to get the thing to stay together in any mode, I decided that I'm just going to say screw it. I glued it into Battleroid mode.
Okay.
And I left it be, and I just set it up on my shelf and walked away, and then I bought a Yamato VF1.
Okay.
Well, I went ahead and I remember when it came out, and I mean the artwork. I mean it has the scaliness, especially when the Batroid mode. I think the fighter and the Gerwok look reasonably well. But when I was they did the pre photos, and then I just happened to be in Japan before it came out. But they had it on display at Akihabara, but the kit wasn't out yet. So look, you know,
I remember that day.
Yeah. So it was cool seeing it, but it wasn't available yet, you know, and then it came out after I left Japan, and then I recently got one actually from Kyle because Hobby Link Japan had a sale. They were selling them for $20 a pop, so I finally bought one, and I actually have it in little baggies, and I've taken it off the 100 sprues, and you know, but it's interesting. It's fun to build, I can tell you that. It's a much more fun to build than the Hoskawa kit, I can tell you that right off the bat. But the details are soft, not as good and not as the fine details that you would see on the Hoskawa kit. And but it comes with a figure, which is good. And but it's this weird like modernist take on like the Valkyrie, because like the round panels like on the legs are like little squared off, and yeah. You know, there's these weird little like nuances that like it's cool, but it's like different, you know. And it's like you know, I'm not 100% bought in on it yet, but it's there.
That's what it is.
It's there. Yeah, it's a Gunpla kit. Yeah, definitely.
But without the care that they would put into a Gunpla,
right.
Which is the problem. It's like Gundam is Bandai's bread and butter, so they're going to go out of their way not to screw things up. Macross, you know.
But you got the Yamato toys and you know, and some other, you know, basically Yamato, and you know, you a reasonably transformable Valkyrie can be built. It can be done. And the fact that it just seemed like they took a giant step backwards. I don't mind the modernist take on it, but when you start getting things like the head's too big and like the you know, arms are way too small, and they just really didn't take the care to refine it a little bit better than they should have.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to building it. I have one, and you know, I just need to start working on the paint on it. You know, I gotta start painting it and doing some preliminary gluing and stuff, but you know, it was kind of a letdown. I'll say it. You know, it was a bit of a letdown. But the cool thing, what's great about it is really fun and good. But what's kind of bad about it is like really bad. It's like, you know, it is cool seeing the leg pivot system on it on something. It was nice to see it. Yeah. You know, and that's cool. It kind of confirmed something that we always wondered how those legs went in, and it kind of in a certain.
Oh well, there are all the
it.
Diagrams.
For yeah. That, you know. Yeah. Yeah, there's diagrams, but everybody was always, you know, it always felt like with certain people I would talk to or whatever that it was like, it was kind of wasn't 100%, but
right.
I went with it. I was fine with it, but, you know, it was kind of cool to see that. So, but that's, and but in the armor kit with it that comes with it as well, I kind of like it. You know, there's certain things about it, like the missiles with the fins. I thought that was really cool. It comes with a full set of either if you want to do all small missiles or all the nuclear, yeah, the box.
Reaction.
Yeah.
Reaction.
So you can do a full complement, yeah, unlike the Hasegawa one where you need two of those to do if you want to do like a second one or something. But so, and I think, you know, I love the multicolor. I thought that was kind of cool. But there's like some engineering, for instance, I mean, Kyle experienced, would probably, you know, definitely experience this, is that the black line that goes around the nose of the aircraft, that's like a separate piece.
Yeah.
It isn't a decal, you
and
know?
It doesn't need it, to be a separate piece.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, what? Why is that? It's just like, well, you know.
My story of the Bandai kit didn't end in complete failure. It eventually did fall off my dresser and shatter into a million pieces on the floor. But I was able to salvage it and put a few sections back together. I removed the pilot figure, and it fits perfectly in a Hasegawa Valkyrie.
Okay.
And what I plan to do is either make a diorama of an assembly line, or just beat the shit out of the pieces and make a crash site diorama. So, yeah. Uh-huh. That's a great use for the kit.
And also, I have to say that for a lot of things with that, for example, I saw, like, people were talking about how the in fighter mode, the legs don't really line up correctly. They're not completely vertical.
Yeah.
But there are a few people on Macross World who have solved most of these problems.
Oh,
and
really?
So, yeah. So there is stuff there about how to deal with this.
And that's another thing, is that pivot on the feet, where there's like this little door that opens up so the feet can be sideways. Like, you know, they can be, you know, you can display it better with the feet. And it's like, I've never seen that on anything, in any line art or anything, you know.
It was ambitious.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, it was ambitious. That's really the best way to say it, you know. And it's weird comparing it to the Bandai Frontier kits, because in certain ways it seems like the Frontier kits tend to be very, I think, go together well, and I think they're very cool. I like them. I think there's a nice balance between the toy aspect of it and the model aspect of it. Where I think the Valkyrie tends, I don't know, it just seems a little bit more toy-esque, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so. Have you built any of the Frontier kits?
I have not, no.
I haven't either.
Yeah. The only one I built was I have the clear one, that the limited edition clear one. And it was a fun build. It, I heard the decals aren't that great on these kits.
Right.
That I do have the heavy armored Messiah, and that's like, talk about sprue. I mean, there's must be about 50 sprues in that thing.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it's just like trying to wrap my mind about how I'm gonna do this, you know. And I do want to build them more, you know. But when you, like, for me, for instance, like Bandai has done, you know, VF. What's the main VF 23?
25.
Front 25, VF 25. And, you know, you have the Hasegawa one, you have the Bandai one.
Right.
And if somebody pushed those two kits in front of me, I'll probably grab the Hasegawa one.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just, I like that extra refinement in the kits.
Although, of course, the Bandai ones are transformable in the Hasegawa one.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like I said, I built the clear one and it looks good. I mean, I think the paneling, it's amazing that form can turn into a robot, because the way the panels sit flat, and it's my favorite, next to the VF1 and the VF4, it's probably my favorite fighter mode. It's a very beautiful aircraft. I mean, I never when I'm not much of a VF-19 person or any of the other ones so much, but you know, as an airplane, it looks great. I think, and I think their models were good, but I just don't have enough experience of actually finishing one. I just haven't gotten to that point yet, you know.
Yeah, so. I kind of want to pick up the Hasegawa ones, and they've been, I mean, they've been coming out with more than I would have expected, because they came out with just the plain old VF-25 Messiah without any packs on it, and you could turn it into either Altos or Osmas.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, although the problem is that I don't think Osma ever... I don't think Osma's fighter is ever shown without the armor pack on it in the show.
Oh, okay.
In the show, no.
He always has that.
Yeah. In the movies, though, he might be without it at one point.
Yeah, I don't remember.
You see it in the hangar sitting by itself without any armor parts, but he's always flying it with armor packs on it.
Yeah. And then they came out with the Mihail one that has the sound boosters and the little Ronka figure.
Yeah.
And then they just came out with the Luca version.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think it's kind of, I thought they, I don't know how much they were going to do, but I'm really surprised that they stepped up their model kits for Frontier, you know, especially with when Bandai has the license, you know. You
think, well, there, Bandai, yeah. And there was some, you know, deal you think, there. Where they had to, I think they probably would have made them a lot sooner, just as they did the Macross Zero ones. But because of the deal with Bandai, they had to wait 5 years.
Okay.
Before coming out with them. So I'm sure they probably had these molds, like they probably designed it like a few years ago, and they were like, okay, we got to be ready. 5 years, boom, okay, get that out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's cool. I'm glad they did that. I thought that was, I'm glad Hasegawa put that out, because that's the one I'm going to build, I think, when it comes down to it. I'll probably build a Hasegawa one for sure.
Okay, so we've got the other Macross model manufacturer right now, which is Wave, who do the 1/100 VF-1s and VF-0s, and also do the 172nd Destroids.
Yeah.
I don't know why Hasegawa doesn't want to do Destroids. You know, they're such proven moneymakers.
Yeah, I'm not. You know, I don't.
Everyone.
I don't understand that either. They just seem to be with the fighters, you know. But they're not really a tank builder, so to say.
Right.
Yeah. if anybody did the Destroids, and it would be Tamiya. You know, Tamiya would do a
right,
job
right.
Like that. But yeah, you know, it's weird because their Zero kit is like this odd scale. It doesn't fit into anything. I don't think it's even 1/100 scale. It's like a box.
No,
scale.
It's non-scale.
It's a non-scale.
It says on it non-scale.
I've heard it's pretty comparable to the new Dao line that Yamato put out of the Macross Plus. Variable fighters.
Okay.
I have never found one to buy one to build one, which I would like to do. And their 1/100 stuff, you know, was needed because the only 1/100 scale Valkyrie kits for that were out there were the original Airy kits, and those things were just, you know, they should have been discontinued in 1984, you know, and they're still being made. And I think they're beautiful. I think they're well done. I have the Batloid. I need to buy the fighter. And the cool thing they did, unlike Hasegawa, was that you can build the fighter. You can buy the fighter kit. You can buy the Batroid kit, and it has extra pieces to make it into the Gerwok mode. So that's why I haven't done the review. I haven't done the review yet, because I want to review all three of them at the same time and have the Gerwok as its own thing. But it comes with extra plastic parts, and like one part of the stand comes in the fighter and the other part of the stand comes with the robot. So you buy the three, you buy the two kits, and you can build the full on, you can build a Gerwok with it, you know? So it's really cool. And it's a cool little piece that you put in the bottom, and it, you know, you take off a couple of pieces here. It even has the antenna. It's really cool.
Huh.
So I just, you know, I just have to find the kit. So, but those were needed because it's cool. I want to build those because I have the 100 original 1/100 Batroid kits or the Destroid kits, and so it needed some good Valkyries next to it. And they finally have some good.
Right.
And same thing if you want to build the factory, you can actually put like a real nice Valkyrie inside of it as opposed to like one of those old ones, you know. And right. And for their Destroid kits, again, I think it was the two kits, the Spartan and the Defender, the Defender, were really good. Were really good kits for their time, but the refinement that Wave did with those kits are really nice. I mean, they did they're really just like the I haven't finished them yet, and they also did a missile phalanx, which had never been done. So yeah, that kit was never made in the 80s. So that was right. really big for a lot of people, was that kit coming out. So the only one they haven't done yet is the Spartan. And I wouldn't be surprised if it comes out, if they announce it this year or next year. But yeah, and they're beautiful. It has Tengen art on the front, and they're gorgeous. I think it's the best work that he's done is on those Destroid kits, the boxes on that. They're just gorgeous, right. beautiful stuff. So.
Well, they still haven't come out with a 1/72 scale monster.
Yeah. Nobody's done that.
Well,
I've heard rumors. We've heard rumors, but we don't know if it'll ever happen or not.
Well, there is a... There is a fan-made one that Jason just got. That's,
I saw that. Actually got that.
Oh yeah, you haven't seen the pictures?
It's huge.
Oh, it's in the Facebook group. It's huge.
And that's the thing. A lot of, and it's kind of leads into maybe our next thing is you know, what kits we like to see, but you know we didn't even talk about resin kits, which is its own thing, you know. The only one I've bought, I'm not really into resin, but I did, as Kyle did, we bought the VF4 resin kit,
right.
which was based off the Repu kit, or from 1991. Yeah. I remember it as a kid, but I couldn't afford it. It was like $60. So,
right.
And that's the only resin kit, Macross resin kit I've ever bought. You know, that
I've seen like pictures of like everything.
Yeah.
I mean, every single Valkyrie from Macross 7.
Yeah.
Someone made a resin kit at some point.
And that's what Wave originally did. You can originally Wave right. did a lot of the vehicles from Macross 7. They did
And they did the 5-star stories also.
Yeah, yeah. And they're cool resin kits because they come with polycaps. So they're not just like you glue them together and that's it. You can actually pose that they're posable and everything. And I would love to find one, but they're kind of, even in Japan, they're kind of a little pricey on the second hand market. You know, that was kind of when Wave was really introduced into doing Macross kits were those resin kits. So the one thing we should have brought this up with the Hasegawa kit was some of the new kits that are coming out, and a big one was the 48 scale Valkyrie. And it was a huge improvement from the 1/72 scale. All the problems that the 72 scale had, they really fixed in the 48. And 48, and as Kyle knows, both of you guys know, is that, you know, 48 scale is a big aircraft scale, and to finally have a Valkyrie in 1/48 scale is mind blowing. It's like, that's what I always dreamed as a kid, was to have a 1/48 scale Valkyrie model kit, and to actually have them come out with the one was amazing. And then, I don't know, you want to talk about the new kit that just came out by Hasegawa?
The one that's about to come out? Or the one that...
The one that's about to come out.
Yeah, they're
looking forward to.
Yes.
They're finally coming out with the first Macross SDF-1, kind of smaller scale. I think the first kit since like 1982 or 1983 or whatever.
Yeah.
That old one came out. Now it's the Do You Remember Love version.
Womp womp.
Hey, I'm no problems with the Do You Remember Love
version. I actually like it more myself.
Yeah.
I just know there are quite a few vocal minorities.
Yeah. We really want the TV
version. Really want the TV version.
Yeah.
I kind of wish it came with the Daedalus and the Prometheus, though, just so you could make the Macross the first that version.
That would be pretty awesome.
That's awesome, yeah.
But yeah, they're and this is like really far afield for Hasegawa.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, the Batroid was far afield. This is getting even weirder.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing that they're doing that kit. I am so happy for that. Yeah. Probably the only time I'm ever going to do a pre-order. I've never done pre-orders. I've maybe done it one other time in my life, but I'll definitely pre-order that one because it's just cool.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah.
Oh.
And it looks good.
And it looks beautiful.
Like,
yeah.
They just put the pictures on the website of it, like, all painted, and it looks great. Yeah. So, but what would you like to see them do in the future?
A VF4.
Yeah.
A VF4, definitely. And that would be awesome. I hope it happens. I also like to see a super armored or a heavy armored Bat-Roid.
Yeah.
72nd. I would love to see that.
That would be nice.
Yeah, that would be pretty great.
I had talked to Tenjin about what kit he would like to see. That was a question I asked him at the last MacrossCon, and he said he would like to see the Basara VF-19. You know, the fire
that would be great too.
I can imagine the artwork on that thing. I think it would just be amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So that would be cool to see that. I agree with him on that. What about you? Any other ones you'd like to see?
I just thought of one and it just slipped my mind. VF4. What was I thinking? It's gone.
I'd honestly like to see a Zentradi armor kit, especially if Bandai did.
Yeah.
That would be kind of cool.
I'm not sure Hasegawa would be
It would probably have to be Bandai, because I can see Bandai doing like a nice figure kit of that, you know? And have it in scale with the 1/100 or 1/72nd scale stuff. You know.
I'd like a YF-29, I guess. Now that they can do Frontier stuff, you know, like, because the only YF-29 kit that came out was the 1/100 scale Bandai one, which I got, and it was, it was okay.
Hey, going back to the new, you know, the new Do You Remember Love SDF-1 kit, is that the fact that there's never been a kit of the Do You Remember Love vehicle, you know, in any mode. It's always been the TV earlier on back then. So this is really the first kit of that kit that has ever come out, which is, again, another kind of landmark for that model kit.
Right. Yeah, so I kind of hope they do the Storm Attacker construction.
Oh, definitely.
That would be
cool. At some point.
Yeah.
If they're smart, they probably designed it in some way that they could reuse some of the pieces. I know what I was thinking. I'd like to see some of the Macross the Ride stuff.
Some more of that? Like actual full-on
kits. The one that I really liked was the VF-19 Active.
Yeah, that was a cool one.
The Notung, which is the blue and white one that Chelsea, the lead female character, flies.
Oh, Chelsea.
And, of course, she's part Meltrondi. I mean, so that you've got, or full Meltrondi, I can't remember. But, so her last name is Scarlet, and then you've got the hero, whose last name is Aoba, and Ao means blue, so you've got, you know, the human blue.
Right.
Meltrondi, red, you know.
Except
you can kind of see where they're going with that. But her VF-19 is just really, really cool.
Oh, yeah.
And someone at Wonderfest came out with, I think last year, came out with 4 conversion kits for turning your Hasegawa kits into Macross the Ride kits, but they didn't do that one.
Oh.
No, and I think I remember Graham at Macross World, who I think was talking to Yamato at the time that Macross the Ride was coming out, and asked them about that one. And they said that they would need to replace most of the parts of a VF-19 toy to make it. So I can kind of see why no one is coming out with it, but I would love to see it just because it looks so cool.
Definitely. Something I would really love to see someday is maybe a Battle 7.
Yeah. Or City 7.
Yeah. Well, because we've never seen any incarnation of the Battle or City 7 ever.
Right.
Not
yeah, they stopped form. Doing the ships pretty early on, mm-hmm. Which I think, you know, again, I mean, Renato's talked about this, but I think there was a big problem at Takatoku when the original toys were coming out with the older staff members saying, well, the show's called Macross, so let's push the this big ship, toy of this ship.
Right, right.
And the younger people were like, no, 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 this plane that turns into the robot, that's the one. That's the one that everyone's going to go, all the kids are going to go for.
Yeah.
And I think, of course, the younger staff members were right. And ever since then, like, they've shied away from doing any of the larger ships except for the Macross Quarter.
That's a, it's sad because that's stuff I would, if it came out, I would buy it, you know. You built so many Valkyries and you built so many for over, you know, 30 years or whatever. And you built so many kits and it's nice to see something different, you know. You know, that's why when the VF-11 model kit by Hasegawa came out, I mean, I jumped on that thing so quick because it was like, it's different. It's like, you know, it's not a VF-1. Not saying there's nothing wrong with the VF-1, but it was kind of cool that they actually did a VF-11, you know. It's just...
And we haven't even gotten into just how many different reissues of stuff they come out with, because it's like, just put a new decal sheet in it.
Yeah.
New painting instructions and reissue it again. Yeah. I mean, there's
Bandai reissued a lot of
You were talking about the VF4 earlier. It's like that. I mean, there are so many VF1 kits from Hasegawa.
And Bandai, you know.
And but Hasegawa trusts.
Oh yeah, that's their marketing model, you know. So
yeah, and it seemed for a while there that anytime Yamato would come out with a different, like a unique color scheme, suddenly Hasegawa would jump on it and come out with it too.
Yeah.
So and the one, and this is another one that I've never been able to track down, but the low visibility.
Yeah.
VF1A.
Yeah.
Yamato came out with theirs, and then Hasegawa came out with theirs almost immediately after.
Yeah, there's
some nice art on the box of that.
There's the rollout version. There's the low viz. There's another the knights, and then there's the Max and Miria ones, and there's it's endless. There's so many of them, and it wasn't for
Sonic
the
Sonic Birds.
I want to see a Hummingbirds VF-11, man.
Oh yeah,
Hummingbirds one. Yeah,
Hummingbirds. Yeah.
No, I mean they need to jump on that Macross 7 license for the VF-11 because they could.
Yeah,
really. Yeah,
you could really do a lot with that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I guess is that everything for an overview?
Yeah, I think
we've been talking for a couple hours.
So yeah, we've had a few. Technical snags, so that's kind of lengthening things, but I think that's most of it, right?
Yeah.
At least Adrian wasn't folding his laundry this time.
By the way, Gwen, this is for Gwen. Thank you for getting me that Wave VF1 kit. I really appreciate that, and just thought I'd throw it in there, so...
You know what Gwyn's going to do is he's going to snip that part out, and that's going to be the only part that will appear on the podcast. The rest of everything we've talked about is going to be gone. It's just going to be you thanking him.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, I think that wraps it up for now. If we come up with anything else, we'll talk about it later, and we'll probably... I'd kind of like to do this as like maybe a regular thing, or maybe do like a... You know, go into more detail upon how to build the stuff up. Because
whatever you need for model kits, you know, I'm there for Macross model kits. I'll always be there.
And Leo and I mean, as soon as I actually like get my crap together, Leo has generously offered to help me work out a, VF1 Hasegawa kit. I'm thinking I'm going to go for Max's VF1S.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
Okay, yeah. See, right now I'm building Max's VF1A TV.
So do you remember Love or TV?
The TV version with the white, all white with the blue. Yeah, I'm building that one now, so.
Okay. I'd be doing the Do You Remember Love one.
VF1S, yeah. Well, see, I have I have a B Club, Milia's, armored. What's the name of it?
Quadlin Rub.
Yeah, I have one of those. A resin kit in 72nd scale, put out by B Club.
Oh, okay.
From Do You Remember Love? So my plan was to build that with the VF1S from you know, the Hasegawa VS in Max colors, or the Batloid where they're right. where they're fighting in the hall in the tunnel. So that's my that's right. my goal later on down the road.
Before or after his wings snap?
After.
Okay. Yeah.
Nice. So,
I build the Hasegawa with it and stuff, so that's my plan later on down the road. But I have yeah, that decoy kit.
I have fantasies of doing a whole diorama of the death of Kakizaki.
Yeah.
Yes. Do You Remember Love? But yeah. I don't think I could ever pull that off.
The problem is that you see, I was gonna do that with my because the first one I did was the VF1S, the Hikaru one, and what I was gonna do with that with the missile pods, the big square things. But they look so like awkward on just an empty right, kit yeah. with those big with three of them. There's three on each wing, and
two.
Is it two? Yeah,
the boxes. Yeah.
So yeah, there's like two of them, and it's just like it looked awkward. So I decided not to do it. So, but that was my plan was to do all three of them like that until I saw what they were carrying, and you know, Hasegawa doesn't make it easy.
Right.
Of course not.
Yeah. No. Nothing Hasegawa does is easy.
One thing I do like about those Hasegawa kits is you can take the wings off, and that's very helpful with when you're painting it and stuff. I thought and putting decals on, so that's usually when I.
Oh, you can.
Yeah, don't glue them on.
And the wings are movable unless you use the photo.
Exactly.
Parts.
Yeah.
If you use the photo edge parts, you can't move the wings.
But if you put missiles on it, if you move the wings, then the missiles will be facing the wrong area. So you could, if you put on missiles, you kind of have to commit to what angle you want them in.
Right. Yeah. True. Anyway, I think that's it. So, for Macro Speaker Podcast, this is Richard.
This is Kyle.
And this is Leonardo from Collection DX.
Okay. Folding out.